You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey everyone, for today's episode of Strictly Hip Hop, I got my man Spike Lou of the On Deck TV podcast returning to the hoop talk side of the podcast for the first time in a while. You know I love him on the hip hop side, but I also love him on the hoop talk side. We get into a lot of stuff. We get into the NBA season canceling. Should it have canceled? What do we think of the whole process? What was going through our heads last week as the season was up in the air? Then we of course dive into all of the matchups in the first round going into the second round. Now, we recorded this before the two games that took place last night, which were Milwaukee, Miami, and game six of OKC, Houston. Now, the funny thing is we were both wrong on both of those games. Obviously, Milwaukee ended up losing game one to Miami, and the Thunder ended up winning game six against Houston. So we were both wrong on that. However, the rest of the podcast, we'll see how accurate we are. I think we're fairly accurate for the rest of the podcast, but time will tell. That's why we do these podcasts before the games, because, you know, the whole fun is predicting, right? Anyways, as far as some housekeeping stuff goes, just follow me on the Instagram and the Twitter at RealChrisPlatte, C-H-R-I-S-P-L-A-T-T-E. If you don't know how to spell real, don't follow. Now, on there, those are the best ways to keep up to date on the podcast, the content I have coming on all different places. And also, that's a great way to reach out to me if you want me to make you a customized individual playlist tailored to what I think you would like. I enjoy doing those a lot. I enjoy putting people on to new music. So please, if you're someone that's just looking for new music to get into, just hit me on one of those platforms, or if you have my number, you can text me there, whatever works best for you. Now, as far as the hip-hop content coming, I got some stuff under wraps that I'm working on. And NBA, I'm going to do a lot better this round of getting more content out. Went through a lot. August was a very, very busy and personal month for me. So I want to take time to thank everybody that that was patient with me through that month. And September is going to be a lot better, hopefully. Very optimistic about the content I have coming this month and the stuff I have coming further down the pipeline, always playing ahead. So be on the lookout for everything coming. Again, the best way to find it is on my Instagram and my Twitter, at RealChrisPlatte, C-H-R-I-S-P-L-A-T-T-E. I know you know how to spell real. Thank you, everyone. Let's get into the podcast with my man Spike Lou breaking down some NBA hoops. Hello everyone, welcome back to Strictly Hoop Talk. As always, I'm your host Chris Platty. Returning to the podcast is one half of the On Deck TV podcast, my good friend. You know him from the hip-hop side, you know him from the basketball side. Returning to the basketball side, my guy Spike Lou. How are you, sir?
Absolutely, Chris. What's going on, brother? How you doing out here?
Like I told you before the podcast, I'm gonna keep the same answer I gave you off air. I'm okay. You know, there's things going on that are good. There's a lot of things to be thankful for. This outlet, my connection of people that I have, which includes you, and a lot of other good things going on in my life. But there's also been some tough stuff externally and internally that's been playing out. So how about yourself during these times? How are you?
I understood. I first want to acknowledge what you said. It's very important when you're not just great to say just okay. You don't want to fake and say great and put on a fake smile for people. That makes you feel even worse. Studies have shown. I'm very much in the mental space and mental health. So, you know, anything you need from me, it's important to ask your friends how they're doing, especially during this time, because you can assume everybody's doing great. So thank you for asking. And I'm doing, you know, good. I'm decent. Can't complain at all. Continuing to grind it out. Seeing our way through this brand new times, man. Yeah. Very scary hours, you know?
Very scary hours. Word to Drake. That EP.
Absolutely.
All right, man. Let's first start this podcast off with a quick just rest in peace of coaching legend John Thompson. Please, Hoop fans who don't know his name, or you should, first of all, but if you don't, go spend some time researching. I don't want to I don't want to dive into all of that right now. I want to stick with the current bubble talk. But again, such a tremendously positive impact on the game of basketball. Rest in peace to John Thompson. Condolences to his fans, his friends, his family, all of that. And please, anybody who considers himself a Hoops fan, if you're listening to this podcast and you don't know about John Thompson, do your research, because incredible person and incredibly impactful on the sport that we all love, and I assume we all love, because you wouldn't be listening to some guy talk about basketball if you don't also love basketball.
Absolutely. To piggyback off that, I can say as a young black kid, the Georgetown Hoyas was my first favorite team because of John Thompson. I remember the Big East Saturday game, Saturday afternoon, and the only person I could remember seeing looked like me and the whole team looked like me was the Georgetown Hoyas. So that was definitely my introduction into basketball. I was a big college hoops fan before an NBA fan, so he was one of the people who introduced me to basketball indirectly, me not even knowing him. So it must definitely rest in peace to John Thompson.
Thank you for that, Spike. I'm glad that you added that. And to get off a joke, you know, I am glad that you switched from college to pros. I'm glad you decided to upgrade.
You college basketball, right?
What? Yeah, I'm not a college basketball guy. People find this crazy when I say this, but this is the honest truth.
You went to Michigan State.
Yeah, and I never went to a single basketball game while at Michigan State.
That is crazy.
You got to live in the premier basketball schools.
You got to live in legend on the sidelines right there.
Yeah, I do. And I have all the respect for Tom Izzo. There are a lot of coaches and a lot of programs that I do respect. But if I'm being honest with you, I'm in that small group of people that's just basketball purists. Like, I can't get enough of NBA hoops. I love NBA hoops. I love watching the best players play. And something about college, man, when I watch them play, those zone defenses work so amazingly well because only three people on each team can shoot. And, you know, it's just not the clue. Maybe I was just spoiled by starting with NBA. But no, it's that's where I stand with college basketball.
That makes sense, because college basketball used to be a lot better. I'm showing my age difference between me and you. But I probably stopped watching college basketball around the time that you started watching basketball, because it just wasn't good anymore.
2004, baby, the Pistons.
Yeah, so, yeah, I was really definitely done with college basketball by then. It was more so between the 90s and the early 2000s when you had Allen Iverson and just Marcus Camby and all of these, just like some of my favorite college players when they used to stay like 3+ years. It would be an amazing thing to watch. But now, like you said, you get one and done and it's all spread out as far as the talent. So not as good. The product's not as good anymore.
Definitely not. And now this is why we're doing a podcast on the NBA and not college basketball. So let's get to it. Let's get the other serious topic out of the way, the important topic. So last week there was a split decision. This is why I wanted you specifically on the podcast, because you've been on the podcast talking about the coronavirus impacting the music industry, and I've gotten great feedback from that podcast as well. From a lot of people, everybody said that they really value your perspective, and I also value your perspective on world issues and on issues that are bigger than what's in front of us. And the season canceling, so there was the police brutality victim, Jacob, and I I want to get this all right, but the police brutality victim, Jacob in Wisconsin, and who was shot 7 times and now is paralyzed, correct, from the leg down?
Right.
Right.
He's paralyzed from the legs down, huh?
As a, and just a horrible, horrible situation, which led to what was the first chain of reaction was the Milwaukee Bucks not taking the court for the game. They were willing to actually boycott or forfeit the game and take the L against the Orlando Magic and go down or go up 3-2 in the series and just play the next game. But Orlando Magic also ended up boycotting the game. And then next thing we know, all of the games throughout the next 2 days were boycotted. And in this process, there was a big, big talk. There's a big player meeting or a league meeting of over 200 voices in that meeting. Everyone from the prominent players like LeBron James to people that are on the NBA office and executive side of the situation to owners. Everybody trying to figure out if this season was actually going to continue. So let's stop right there in that moment, Spike. As you're getting those notifications on your phone, and as things are happening in real time, that there's real talk that the games are being boycotted, and there's a decision that is honestly up in the air whether the season is continuing. What are your thoughts there? Where are you looking, and where are you thinking in that moment?
That's a great question. Jacob Blake was the name of the victim in Kenosha, Wisconsin. He's paralyzed from the legs down, as you said. My immediate thoughts went to, and the reason is because in my group chat, the Realville group chat, we had a long dialogue back and forth about when Kyrie Irving first made the declaration of his playing something that we really want to do in the NBA right now with everything that's going on outside the bubble. Not only are we talking about COVID, but we're talking about the George Floyd case, Breonna Taylor case, and playing basketball may take away from, at that point in time, all the protests and unrest that were happening in America. I agree with Kyrie Irving. I really didn't see a good point when people were saying, well, they should play. One of the biggest talking points was, well, if you're in the bubble and all the media is already here, then wouldn't you have a bigger platform than if these guys just weren't sitting at home and they weren't playing? I disagree with that. I think now in today's times in 2020, you can get your message out there a lot of different ways. Some of the pushback that I got, if you have a guy like one of the lesser named guys, if you have one of them in the bubble, they're not going to get that same attention that they would get because basketball is not being played. So if you get one of these guys that really want their message out there, if it's a give me a random name, if it's a
Tim Hardaway Jr.,
it's not going to have the same effect as a LeBron James. So why wouldn't Tim Hardaway Jr. go to the bubble and say what he needed to say? And I just disagree with that. I think there is a give and take with that scenario. And the give is, okay, we'll let you guys talk as long as you play basketball. And I don't think that should be the context. I don't think that should be a caveat at all, saying, well, you have to play basketball if you want to get your message out there. These things that are happening outside of the bubble are going to affect these men, whether it be their children, whether it be themselves. A lot of NBA players have had altercations with the cops wrongfully. Cephalosha, a couple of years ago, had his leg broken, was injured in a playoff, had to sit out all the playoffs. So not to be long-winded about your question, but I did think it was impressive. I thought it was impressive what the Bucks made the decision to do, and at least if it was just for one game, I thought that it was impressive for them to go out there and say, this is what we're doing. But I do think that they dropped the ball in not coordinating with everyone, because now what you do is you put the ball in everybody else's court and say, hey, we're doing this. And now if someone else goes out there and they don't feel the same, they look like the bad guys. Like if LeBron James wants to go out here and play because the Bucks didn't play, now LeBron James looks like the bad guy and gets all of this negative PR. So my only critique would have been just more coordination amongst the teams, because I do feel like it should have been longer than 2 days. I personally feel like they could have packed it up and and walked away, because at the very beginning, when it was about George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, and it's like, well, how many more? And you see all these catchy things on the back mm-hmm. of the jersey, and then boom, it happens again. And okay, we stopped playing basketball for a day, and now we're right back at it. That's something to think about. What would you say?
Yeah, I think that's a very valid point, and that's where it brought me to where my thought process was on it, and that essentially I was 1,000% behind the players in their decision, regardless of what it was, because I think we sort of disagree a little bit in the bubble. I do think that it has that extra spotlight that you talked about. I do think it has been a good thing. I understand what you're saying, that these players, they all have their Instagrams, their Facebooks, their whatever social media they want to use, and they have the connections and media outlets to make their statements and all of that. But there's something about, like, I go back to last night, Jamal Murray's incredible fourth quarter performance, where he smoked the Jazz for 21 points, carried the Nuggets to a win to force a game 7, and then after the game had the immediate post game interview where he was fighting back tears with his sneakers that had George Floyd and Breonna Taylor on them, and talking about how this is so much bigger than him. And that moment right there, I think, is more powerful than LeBron James getting on Instagram and saying, listen, we need to end racism. You know, that moment where you're watching greatness in front of you, you're admiring greatness in front of you. And then in that very moment, these players have the poise to gather themselves, understand the opportunity that they have, and to make that statement. I think that impacts people. I think that impacts the people that are maybe unaware or on the fence or not really sure of where they stand on these issues. I think that has a far greater impact than watching somebody sit on their couch and, you know, and speak about racism, even if it's done eloquently. You know, mm-hmm. there's something about America, especially, I've said this before, has a fixation with celebrity. And that's something that's just in the American DNA. And so if you're watching somebody do greatness in front of you, there's that admiration, and with that admiration comes more ability to influence. So that's why I think that the bubble has been a good thing so far. And then fast forward into the support of me, or my support of the players deciding whatever they want to decide, whether they continue or cancel the season, is, again, you know, you gotta think about this logically, you know. And I go back to the Tupac analogy from his 1994 interview, which is amazing. I'm not going to try to paraphrase it or anything like that, because I don't want to do it justice. It's the best analogy I've ever heard on race relations. So go look it up. It's an MTV interview from 1994, and I know you're aware of it, Spike. But I'm talking to my audience, and what I say all that to say is that, you know, eventually, you know, you start as asking, and then things aren't working, and you're using, and this whole time there's this whole idea that sports should be separate from society. Sports is something that brings us together, and when it's sports, it doesn't matter if you're black, white, Asian, whatever. But okay, we've tried changing the world socially outside of sports. That hasn't worked. We gotta start to do something more radical. So if it's canceling a season, if that's gonna push real change, screw it. If that pushes any change, I would gladly stand by the players in that decision, because at the end of the day, you know, I would gladly sacrifice one season of basketball if it brings any change, let alone real change, let alone momentous change. So that's kind of where I stand with the whole season.
Well, Chris, you have a much better soul than a lot of people watching basketball. You're a good guy. Most people don't want their politics and their sports mixed. And one of the biggest things I say to the stance that I have, change happens when people are uncomfortable. I think that there were a lot of accommodations made to make people feel comfortable with this bubble. Build a space in Orlando, five of the players down here, make them stay, we separate them from their family, also sports fans can feel comfortable and feel a bit of normal added to their life with everything going on with the COVID, with everything going on with the pandemic in our country. And the moment that the NBA players say, nope, I'm not doing this, that makes the America uncomfortable, not only in the sense of, hey, there's nothing to watch on TV, but from a financial standpoint, all the money that's tied into the NBA, all the advertising that's tied into the NBA, the owners that own these teams, those things come to a screeching halt if these players decide not to play. And that's a lot of power. And
yeah.
One of the things I want to challenge you on, because you're not the only person that said this, Animal Brown and I were having the conversation as well, and you said something as far as, well, if they're not here playing, the message with them sitting at home on the couch won't be strong enough. I question you guys as to why is it that they're going to be at home sitting on the couch? Some of these guys, I feel like it's a lot more important to them. So they'll go beyond Instagram and they'll go beyond, you know, just doing social media stuff. They'll actually get out here and do things that are going to positively affect change. And I'm not taking anything away from NBA fans, but if I'm playing a game every other day, giving it my all, I don't feel like, you know, pulling strings. And even if I'm just doing the very minimum and telling my team to go do it, I still may not feel like doing those things because I'm so focused on winning a championship. If the NBA players had held to that commitment of making America uncomfortable right now, there's no basketball, there will be no champion, because we wanted you to stop before this bubble started with the killing of black people, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, and it happens again. So you know what we're going to do? We're not going to play basketball. We're going to hold all the owners of these teams, we're going to hold them to their words and make them go out and talk to their powerful friends and make their powerful friends do things that will change the laws, that will hold people accountable for the things that are happening. Not protests, not the things that we've been doing, like you said, for a long time that don't seem to get the results that we're looking for, but making people genuinely uncomfortable. Because I would go even a step further with what the NBA had done for the protests, a boycott for one day. Let's say that they did cancel the rest of the season. This puts the onus on the NFL starting in 2 weeks, which is the right. biggest sport in America. For them to say, well, we're just going to ignore this and continue to play, I don't think that that's a possibility for them. So I think that a lot was residing on those guys getting back out there to play quickly, making people feel more comfortably. And I don't think that they got everything that they should have before they decided to lace the sneakers back up.
That's very interesting. And I agree, especially with your point about the NFL, and the shift, the focus would immediately shift to the NFL and say, okay, you know, you're on
Absolutely.
The clock now.
You guys are, now what are you guys going to do? Because these guys put it on the line and they sacrificed what's normal to them, and they made people feel uncomfortable. So what are you guys going to do with an even bigger platform? Think it would have put the onus on them, but now they can go business as usual. And like I say, I want people to understand one thing. I know that these guys aren't social heroes. This is no Martin Luther King is out there on the court. LeBron does a great job. George Hill does a great job. They're guys that do a really good job in holding this stuff together and being more social and putting the NBA in the forefront when it comes to social issues. But with that power comes the responsibility as well. You know, like they're sometimes, I don't think that a lot of these guys are willing to be as uncomfortable as it takes for things to really change.
Yeah.
And that's easy for me to say. I'm not a basketball player making millions of dollars. Yeah. I do want people to know that. I notice that I'm not standing on the sideline yelling, say, hey, stop playing. But I do see, you know, a different approach, a different initiative that could have been taken where people are a lot more uncomfortable. And one of the comparisons that I made when the bus boycotts in Montgomery happened and Martin Luther King Jr. was spearheading that. You know, those people went and walked and didn't ride the buses for 3 years. Like they were uncomfortable for 3 years in order to get what they were looking for from the city of Montgomery. And I think if the NBA players, I'm not saying that they stopped playing for 3 years, but make people uncomfortable for a little while and watch the things that start to change.
Yeah. I mean, That's why I love having you on this podcast, is for moments like this, because, you know, the truth is I genuinely don't know the right answer. I have my thoughts. I have my conclusions. I have my opinions. But again, it's an outside perspective, and it's coming from a perspective that I just, I know that I don't know it's such a complex situation. It's hard to figure out what exactly is the right approach. You know, maybe it's somewhere in the middle of what we're saying. Maybe it's, maybe it's you, maybe it's me. We don't know, but, we gotta try to find out. We gotta find out what it is.
Absolutely.
And get the right approach going so that we can make some real change. But,
I do want to commend those guys. I don't want it to sound like I said that those guys did do anything, and they should have did more, and that's where I'm leaving it. I want those guys to know what they did took guts. And it took a lot of courage to sit out that game and not know if they're going to be disqualified or, like you said, forfeit. But, you know, there's a lot more that could be done as well. But I do want people to know that I'm very impressed by what they did do. It was a start.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Kyrie Irving was right. I wanted to say that Kyrie was right. I think that people gave him a lot of flack, and they tied his opinion into his flat earth theory and the other not so popular theories that he has, and they were thinking that he was just talking out of his, excuse my French, ass. But I don't think that was the case. I think that he put thought behind it. To me, Kyrie Irving is a very thoughtful guy, as far as giving a lot of thought and leg room to stretch ideas. I think he's that type of person, and most people aren't. So when he says something that's, hey, the earth is flat, they want to tie all of his opinions into that, and I don't think that's fair.
Yeah, no, I do, all jokes aside, I do agree with that. I do see Kyrie Irving as a very thoughtful and intelligent person. It certainly took a lot of thought there was definitely a lot of thought behind the destruction of the Boston Celtics when he was there.
Absolutely. No normal person can do that, right? You got to be a sick person with some output to actually do what he did to the Celtics. I agree with that.
This man took a NBA superstar, Jason Tatum, and made him look puppy. Average.
And a great NBA coach, and made him look like he didn't know what he was doing. Brad Stevens. Pardon me, I'm a Celtics fan, so I know vividly what you're speaking of. Shout out to Kemba Walker, the savior.
All right, man. Let's talk about some. Let's talk about some matchups. We got, as we're recording this for reference, Bucks Heat has just tipped off relatively recently. But let's start with Celtics Raptors, since we just talked about the Celtics. Celtics Raptors. Celtics are up 1-0. I think Celtics will win this series easier than people thought. I think a lot of people coming into the series were thinking Raptors in seven or Celtics in seven. It was a series that, now with Gordon Hayward's injury, everybody was like, I think more people were starting to lean Raptors as opposed to Celtics. But I think the Celtics will win this series easier than a lot of people think, because they gave the Raptors a lot of problems in game one, and Boston being a great transition defense greatly hurts the Raptors, who rely heavily on transition offense. They just, Toronto just doesn't look that great in half court offense. They don't have a lot of self creation. They have Pascal Siakam, who can do a little creating, but most of it is in the post, and that's not, and that hasn't been a strong suit. The Celtics were more than happy to let Pascal Siakam post. Kyle Lowry and Fred Van Fleet, those are guys that dribble and kick. They don't dribble and create. You know, they kind of, they'll dish to the open shooter for sure, but they, which is a good thing to have, but they don't have that James Harden, that Jason Tatum, that whoever that can just you give them the ball,
get a bucket,
and get a bucket flat out. And Pascal's the closest thing they have to that, but the Celtics have three of those guys who can get a bucket at any time, four if Gordon Hayward was playing. So I think the Celtics are going to win this series easier than people think. I think it's going to go five, maybe six. Where are you at on this series?
When it begun, before the tip, I said Celtics in seven. I'm biased. I am a Celtics fan, so I definitely want people to know that. But I agree with you. I think Jason Tatum's the best player in this series. And when it's a close matchup, as I expected it to be, you go with the team that has the best player in the series. But then as I go to it, Kemba Walker may be the second best player in the series. And, I mean, Pascal is great, but I, like you said, I don't think that he can create enough on his own to be considered the best player in a series. Right. So with that being said, and even after the game one performance, I would say the Celtics in five, maybe six. Toronto's going to have to address not having a superstar at some point in time because Jason Tatum's growing into what Boston wants. Every NBA team has that one guy, Kawhi, you know, left Toronto last year. So I just don't think that Toronto has enough star power to propel themselves to any round past this one. Like, they just don't have it.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I agree with that 100%. Toronto needs, they're going to, what they would normally rely on is a bunch of solid players coming together and playing well collectively and also great coaching. But Boston has that as well. And so the advantage, like the Raptors, I think are a team that, okay, let me use this for analogy. I think the Raptors would stand a better chance against the Rockets than they would against the Celtics, even though the Rockets are a better team than the Celtics. The Raptors are a team that's built on excellent coaching, which would be an advantage in that series. Not that Mike D'Antoni isn't a great coach. He is, but...
Better than Nick Nurse, though.
But no, not better than Nick Nurse. I'm with you on that. And also that collectively, I think that they're a team that can stop, even though James Harden would clearly be the best player in that series by far, and Russell Westbrook would probably be the second best. Maybe Pascal's better. Again, we'd have to see how it'd play out. But the Celtics just where the Raptors normally have advantages, which is the fact that they're deep, the fact that they play collectively, the fact that they have great coaching. Those are what the Raptors rely on to win in basketball series, and the Celtics have all of those. So where the Raptors normally have an advantage, the Celtics are able to match that. And so then it just kind of boils down to talent, because if you got both teams with great coaching, very solid depth, and very disciplined, what it's going to come down to is who's going to make more shots. And I think we saw that it's going to be Boston.
Absolutely. And to go off of your idea with the Rockets, I think that the Rockets is it's more of a gimmick. Not to take anything away from James Harden or Mike D'Antoni, which I agree with you, he's a good coach. But I think that Nick Nurse is a better coach, and Nick Nurse would be able to put a game plan together to slow Harden down. And if you slow Harden down, that puts Houston in a bind. And you can't do that with Boston. I think Brad Stevens is just as good a coach as Nick Nurse. And he has Tatum, Brown, Kemba, Smart. Like, he has different roles that people will play. Hayward, when he's good, different roles that people will play that Nick Nurse just can't throw enough firepower at. So I think in the offseason, what they should do is get some more firepower there in Toronto. Five games, like I say, I think this is over. Five, six games, give me Boston.
And I will absolutely give the Raptors at least one game, because I know they're a good team, and they're going to, it's not going to be a domination each game like the Celtics did in game one. No. Toronto's a resilient team. They do got a lot of talent. They will come together and play some good basketball, and they are excellently coached. So I do think that there are, but it just seemed like they went to that zone in the first quarter, or not the first quarter, but in game one, they went to that zone. And for 2 minutes, the Boston Celtics couldn't do anything. But once they figured it out, it gave me the feeling of a team that felt like, wow, this is game one, and we've already played almost all of our cards. You know what I mean? Like, we've exhausted our resources. We're just.
What are we going to do?
Yeah. So yep, that's absolutely how I feel about that. Let's jump to the other East series, Bucks Heat. Mm-hmm. This one's got a lot of little rumblings, you know. A lot of people are ruffling feathers trying to pick Miami in this series. A lot of people are thinking the Bucks are in trouble. where are you with that? Are you thinking that the Miami Heat really have a chance to beat the Milwaukee Bucks in this series?
Absolutely not. I think Bam Adebayo has impressed a lot of people this year. So people are on that bandwagon. They're like, well, if he can play defense as well and if he's that long, then he should be able to at least maintain the Greek Freak. I'm here to tell you, I don't see that happening. I don't think that he's going to be able to slow Greek Freak down as much as people think that he's going to be able to slow him down. This is another one of those series. I see it could be over in five. Miami, Jimmy Butler's strong guy as far as, you know, superstar. Bam Adebayo, I would say, probably is the second best player. I don't think that that's enough to beat the Greek Freak. Even if no one else is better than those two guys for the Heat, the Greek Freak is that much better than those two. Like, he's by far and away the best player in this series. I don't think Miami has anything close to him. And once you get in those close games, playoff basketball, half court, they won't be able to stop him. Regardless of the year that Bam Adebayo had, it won't be one that's good enough to stop Greek Freak when it matters. So I think Milwaukee's going to take this, and it won't be even close. Like, they're playing right now, they're up 12.
Yeah, I agree. I think that when you look at Miami, a lot of what makes Miami good is, oh, they got these interchangeable wings that can shoot threes. And guess what? The Bucks have those, but better.
Yep,
The Bucks have better versions of all the players that the Heat have.
Yep, I agree.
And that's what it comes down to. So I think Milwaukee will win this in five. I think that Giannis is going to establish it. Now, the one thing though, I still am I'm concerned about Milwaukee in the sense that Chris Middleton, who has been pretty solid in the playoffs, not this playoffs I'm talking about, but just overall in his playoff career, he's been pretty solid and he's proven to be pretty reliable. But the issue with me is that Chris Middleton as a number two is just not impressive enough to me, and especially when Eric Bledsoe is your three. And Eric Bledsoe is somebody that obviously we know very famously disappeared last year in the playoffs. So to me, what it comes down to is I have confidence that Milwaukee's going to get through this series, even though Spo is a great coach. And I expect Spo to make some great adjustments. And it'll be really interesting to see if Budenholzer makes adjustments, because Budenholzer is known as being a coach that we do what we do because it got us here. And that was what he got heavily criticized for last year in that series against Toronto, that he didn't make enough adjustments and enough changes because he trusted, we won all these games before we got here, let's not abandon what we're doing. And it will be interesting to see him go against a coach like Eric Spoelstra, who's not afraid to shake it up and to try things. But beyond that, I'm worried about the Bucks beyond this series. I am.
So you think that they make it to Boston and Milwaukee, you say Boston would take that?
I don't know. I'm not ready to say one way or the other when it comes to that series. My decision would be made based off this round.
Got it. Okay.
Right now, I would probably again lean Milwaukee just because of Giannis's singular dominance.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, man. Tatum is that boy.
Tatum
is that boy, and Boston plays collectively great, and I trust Boston's 2-3-4-5 more than I trust Milwaukee's 2-3-4-5. The only player that I really, really trust on Milwaukee outside Giannis is George Hill and Brook Lopez. Those two, I love them. Like,
no
Brook
Beatles?
Lopez. I like Middleton. Like I said, he's solid, but he seems to get these buckets like when they're up 12, not the buckets when they're tied,
when they need them.
Yeah, and that's kind of my thing with Middleton, and that's just a total eye test thing. Like, the numbers could prove me totally wrong on that, but that's just what it feels like when I'm watching him. Brook Lopez, I love this year that they've done this. They've now just said, okay, if you want to switch on a Brook Lopez screen and put a guard on him or a small guy, we're going to let Brook Lopez post up. And Brook Lopez is just absolutely obliterating people on the block when he gets the ball, like anybody. And it's been sensational to watch him. He's been absolutely amazing. Plus, he's been good defensively. So I like Brook Lopez a lot. I like George Hill a lot. George Hill is a very reliable shooter for Milwaukee. And I think that outside of that, though, you know, again, if Brooke Lopez and George Hill are your second and third best performers, or third and fourth best performers, so let's say Middleton performs better than them, that's still, I don't know, that's still kind of questionable when you look at some of these West teams and again the Celtics in the East. So again, my thoughts would have to be on Celtics Bucks, which is what I'm projecting will happen. They'll have to be, it's to be determined.
It makes sense. Let me ask you before we move on to the next series, who has been the best player in the bubble to you?
In the bubble?
Yep.
I would say Luka.
Absolutely. I wanted to see Luka on the same page.
Yeah. I wanted to say Dame, but Dame had a tough series against the Lakers. And to be fair though, I mean Dame was obviously playing, he ended up getting injured throughout that series, and I do feel like he exhausted so much to get there. Plus he was going against a team that's just big and can just, when you're throwing size, I mean, you and I have talked about this a lot. Yeah. I have the theory of I prefer having Giannis in a series over Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Because even if Steph Curry can hit all the threes in the world, but in playoff basketball, there's something, it's just naturally, it's just easier to check a 6'3 guard, even if they're incredibly shifty, than it is to a 7-foot Superman.
It's a lot harder for Steph to get his shot, regardless of how creative he is. He's still a little guy. Yep, I agree with you.
Size matters in the NBA playoffs, and which is why I'm picking the Lakers to win it all.
Mm.
But anyways, I would say it was Luka for sure. What he did in that Clippers series was absolutely fantastic.
I agree. Luka's been the best player in the bubble. I became a fan. Dame is a close second. That would be my second one as well. Jamal Murray is putting in numbers right now. So he would definitely be in that conversation too. But yeah, Luka by far. Luka has established himself as a threat. And if not just here in the bubble, just throughout the season and coming the next season, I cannot wait to see what the Mavs do with that cap space and what they put around him.
Yeah, they're not going to have much cap space.
I thought they were going to be a player.
No, unless they would have to move a lot of contracts, because Tim Hardaway's contract is still super. It's got one more year, and it's going to be super expensive. And Kristaps and Tim Hardaway Jr. alone, those two are going to make $48 million.
Holy moly!
Total, yeah, between those two. So that's, you're talking half the cap already to those two. So it is going to be tough for them to upgrade. But yeah, if they can find some upgrades. And not to mention just get healthy too. Like Dwight Powell was amazing for them before he went down with his injury. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited for the Mavericks. But speaking of the Clippers and the Jazz and the Nuggets, let's get to that side of it, because the Clippers now are waiting to play the winner of this Jazz-Nuggets series that has been just an absolute bucket fest between Jamal Murray and Donovan Mitchell, trading 50-point games like it's nothing. Sensational, like I said, last night's performance that Jamal Murray just went absolutely out of his mind in the fourth quarter. This has been a great, great series. Game 7 set for tomorrow. Spike, where are you leaning on this? Because I picked the Nuggets to win this in 5 to start.
Really?
And then, yeah, I just thought it's tough to replace a 20-point per game score in Utah with Bogdanovich. And then it's also just going to be Mike Conley struggling. Rudy Gobert now wants to be a post-up player, and you can see that everybody on the team hates that he wants to be a post-up player. There's obviously the tension there. I was ready to write off the Jazz, and then they jumped to that 3-1 lead, and I'm like, oh my god, like, what's going on with Denver? And then now Denver has won these last two games and forced a game 7, and I'm rolling with Denver. I thought they were the better team entering this series. I think what Jamal Murray has done has been amazing, and not that Donovan Mitchell has been anything less than amazing as well. But the difference is that Jamal Murray also has Jokic.
Mm, that is true.
Where do you stand on this series?
What I would say before last night's game is that the Jazz were going to take it. I think, like you said, going up 3-1, and just being in a bubble, not normal circumstances, I didn't think that the Nuggets would be able to fight back. But now going into Game 7, I'm taking the Nuggets. I think that you don't put Jamal Murray and Jokic in a 7 game, and I think that Denver has a better team. So for them to have two of the best players in the series, I think that Jokic and Murray is right there with Mitchell. They may be tied for second best, but they're not going to be able to contain Jokic in one game, I don't think, enough to be able to win the series. They blew their chance in Game 5 and Game 6 when they should have walked away with it. And now they're in a tough Game 7, and they're going to be playing one of the most skilled big men in the league in Jokic. And I just don't see how they would be able to hold on. It's like they've almost ran out of gas. Unless Donovan Mitchell has some outstanding performance like we've seen in Game 2, Game 1. Mm-hmm. But he'd have to come away with the victory this time in it. So I would say that the Nuggets are going to take this just because the Jazz blew their chance. They started out fast and they couldn't close it.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm at, but that's the interesting thing, Spike, is that it is just one game. So, yeah. I mean, Jordan Clarkson could hit 9 threes in this game, and that's the difference.
Very true.
You know what I mean? That's the risk, and that's the tough thing about, like, yes, the momentum is clearly on Denver's side. They're confident, they're playing well, but this is a neutral ground, and at the end of the day, this is one game. And this one game, Donovan Mitchell could be off, or he could be on fire, or Jordan Clarkson could be on fire. Jamal Murray could be off. Jamal Murray was inconsistent all last playoffs, which he admitted to. And, you know, for him to have 3 straight games of over 40 points is something that is very, very interesting considering how streaky of a scorer he's been. So history would tell us that unless he's just transcended to another player, which is possibly true, that he's due for a rough game. So that's where this whole idea of this Game 7 is just one game, winner take all, anything can happen. But again, like you said, I'm going with Denver as well. I think their offense is just far superior. And I think that when I watch Utah, it just seems like it's such a struggle when it's not Donovan Mitchell with the ball in his hands. It's very tough for this team to score outside of Donovan Mitchell.
And I thought that would change when Mike Conley came back, and it hasn't. It still looks like everything is so stagnant with their offense.
Yeah. And Denver versus Denver's looks crisp and fluid, and I think Denver has gotten the better shot selection all series.
Absolutely.
Denver. So I think I have to trust that in the Game 7. If you're the Clippers, who do you want to play more, the Jazz or the Nuggets?
The Jazz, because it goes back to that small factor that we say. If I'm the Clippers and Donovan Mitchell gets hot, I just put Kawhi Leonard on.
Or Paul George or any of your other great defenders.
Yeah, I just feel like if Donovan Mitchell is your best player going into the series, it's going to be rough, especially when you're playing against Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, those long wing players, long guys that just get up in your face and love to play defense. I don't think that Donovan Mitchell has an answer for that for 7 games if it goes that far.
Yeah.
For 4 games that you would have to win. So I would definitely want to see the Jazz if I was the Clippers.
Yeah, I do too. Not to mention, you assume that Pat Beverly is going to be able to play at some point, and to be able to throw Pat Beverly, Paul George, and Kawhi Leonard to just all rotate possessions on Donovan Mitchell, that's a tough, tough series. That's a very tough series for Donovan Mitchell. Versus the Nuggets, they have you can't really play against Denver traditionally when it comes to stopping their creators, because all of their creators are great passers. Jamal is a very good passer, but even Mason Plumlee, their backup center, is a great passer. Jokic, obviously a great passer. So if you double Denver will create those scenarios where it's then 4-on-3, and if Jokic has the ball in a 4-on-3, guess what? That's an automatic point because he's one of the greatest passers of all time. So
Absolutely. It's
just it would be a lot tougher for them. Also, not to mention, Jokic is someone that can score on the low block, and if you're And if you're the Clippers, who is a relatively smaller team, Montrezl Harrell plays big. But if you're playing, man, you're not scared of Rudy Gobert posting up 30 times. Bring it.
Come on with it.
Yeah,
come on, exactly. I want to see him post up 30 times. Absolutely.
But Jokic is a lot more scary if he posts up 30 times, because Jokic is going to be able to hit some shots. And if you start to lean in too much to help and dig or whatever at the center, then guess what? He's going to kick it out to one of his shooters.
Right, exactly. And he's got so much skill. Like you said, it's so much different from him either being in the post or having the ball up top than it is dumping it down to Gobert. Just a lot more options when you're dealing with Jokic.
I agree. But to be clear, though, I think the way I see it, though, is either way, the Jazz and the Nuggets, either one that advances against the Clippers are still going to struggle to win more than a game in that series.
Yeah.
I don't think Denver could even push them six.
I agree. I don't think that either one of those teams actually. I would possibly maybe 5-1. I mean, excuse me, 4-1. Yeah, 5 games is what I was trying to say. Yeah. If not a sweep for both teams, like the Clippers, I think would cakewalk into the Western Conference Finals.
I agree with that. Now let's jump to the last series. So the Rockets are playing the Thunder, but.
You mean Rockets?
That's still a series that's happening, but I think we all know where that series is going.
Yeah,
and the Rockets are going to walk out with that one. I would be absolutely stunned if the Thunder force a game seven tonight. So projecting forward, Rockets Lakers. Rockets are interesting because one of their first wins when they made the Robert Covington trade was against the Lakers. And what was interesting about that game, it was in, February? And what happened is the Lakers went small rather than going big. They downsized to fit the Rockets rather than making the Rockets adjust to them, which the Rockets can't do. And guess what? That worked to the Rockets' advantage, and they bombed a lot of threes and won that game against LA. So it was a very interesting thing. It's always interesting to me, Spike, to watch two teams and say, all right, who's adjusting to who?
Mm.
You know, and it was very interesting that the Lakers adjusted to the Rockets. That's something that I've taken. And a lot of people think that the Rockets are going to cause a lot of trouble for the Lakers because the Lakers, Danny Green, hasn't been playing well. They just haven't gotten a lot of great perimeter consistent play outside of LeBron and Anthony Davis. And so... I put it to you like this, Spike. Is there genuine concern for the Lakers in this Rockets series?
There should be. When you're playing a phenomenal scorer like James Harden, you never know what could happen, especially if the shots are falling for those guys. But my question would be, like, when you say the Lakers went small, because I missed this early in the season, mm-hmm. I wasn't really tuned in. Anthony Davis was on the floor, right?
Yeah, he was the five, but yeah, they went with their smaller lineup.
How on earth would the Rockets stop Anthony Davis in a 7-game series? I just don't see that happening.
That's what everything like logically 40, tells 20, me. Yeah,
the very minimum.
But this is the argument you'll get from the Rockets side of it, and I'm with you, Spike. Like I think that Anthony Davis could and should average 30 plus in this series mm-hmm. against the Rockets. But the Rockets are going to say, okay, so we let Anthony Davis post up, get some second chance points, whatever. Guess what? All of those are two-pointers. We're shooting nothing but threes. The math is they're like you said earlier, they're gimmicky. They're relying entirely, they're leaning all the way in on their shooting, and they're going to say, "You know what? That's absolutely fine. What we won't do is we won't let Danny Green hit seven threes. We won't let KCP hit four threes. That's what we're not going to do. We'll let Anthony Davis get 45 with his back to the basket. Because guess what? Between James Harden and all of our shooters, we're going to get 45 points back in threes easy.
True. That's true. And I don't think that's a bad strategy to implement either, but it's going to take...
Yeah.
I won't say perfection, but it's going to take some good nights in the gym. Like the basketball gods are going to have to be with them in order for that to happen 4 times out of 7. Like the odds are just not in their favor for that to happen.
I agree. And I'm always, you know, granted, I'm not an NBA coach or an NBA player, but my perspective has always been, you know, I'll trust somebody I'll trust a big man on the block who I know has a nice touch over a shooter. Because they're closer to the basket, and I think that's going to be easier points. So I'm rolling with the Lakers in this series, but I do think it's very interesting, and I think it's very interesting for Harden's legacy too. Because if Harden wins this series somehow, if he beats LeBron James, one of the best players of all time, and Anthony Davis, and propels this team to the conference finals, I think that changes the narrative. Just like how you and I spoke off air about Luka. Mm-hmm. If Luka wanted the question, so I'll bring it to the fans, to the listeners of this podcast here. The question I texted Spike is, if Luka finds a way to win this series against the Clippers, is he better than Harden? Mm. And our answer to both of that question was yes.
True.
And
because it would have been doing what Harden has yet to do in the playoffs.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And so if Harden is able to win this series, this is a big, big statement for him. And I think it would be it's going to be very interesting. I do think it's going to be a good series. And, you know, I just can't get the image out of my head of the Rockets that one year missing 27 straight threes and losing that game and ultimately losing the series to the Golden State Warriors. I can't get that image out of my head. And for that reason, as much as I like the Rockets, I can't pick them against the Lakers. I'm going to trust the Lakers in this series, even though the Lakers offense is more clunky. It's not as fluid. And if we've seen anything in this bubble, it's been that offense is favored, has been favored over defense. And also, you know, a quick shout out to Mike D'Antoni, because he made it very clear to show that statistically speaking, the Rockets were the number one defense in the NBA during the playoffs so far.
Please.
So, well, they are a really good defense in one sense. They have very, very great hands. Mm. They play the passing lanes very well. They get a lot of great steals, and they're just active. And that's a lot of what defense is just activity. They rest Harden on the worst player, or they let Harden switch onto the center, because Harden's actually a really good post defender. He's really good at poking the ball loose, and he's very strong, so he can stand his ground against most bigs. So they're actually a solid defensive team. But again, when it comes to Lakers, I think that size, they should be able to just get a lot of second chance points. They should be able to get a lot of easier back to the basket, inside the paint looks. And I think that the Lakers will be disciplined enough on the Rockets shooters that they'll be able to make it tough for the Rockets in this series. So I think the Lakers will win this in six.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, and I am going to select the Rockets. An upset. I actually have the Rockets winning it. I say Houston over Boston in the finals. I think this is the perfect platform for a James Harden title. People are going to try to throw the asterisk by it since it was in a bubble and it was an abnormal season. And this is an offensive. I heard a lot of people say the offense in the bubble has just been different because shots are falling at a higher pace. All of this, I think, favors James Harden. I think the narrative is there for him to win a title here in the bubble and get over that hump. And then when things resume and they get back to normal, there's less pressure on him to win in a what I call an original title or a traditional, I should say, right, title. But I do think that everything is in place for the Rockets here. This series is going to depend on how well that Anthony Davis has played. And if you go back to Anthony Davis in his college years at Kentucky, like, big games are not his forte. Like, when big games come up, he just doesn't play well. And until I see him put the nail in the coffin of a contender, which the Rockets would be, then I don't feel uncomfortable taking James Harden in this series, and actually to take it all, because he's shown that level of dominance from an offensive standpoint. We can get guys to show up and help him, and then, I mean, his sidekick is Russell Westbrook. Who could ask for a better number two? In a sense of just now with the recklessness and the way that he plays and how it will translate in the bubble, I think that's going to be very tough to stop. I think they're going to get the best of LeBron. I think that Kawhi is not going to have any help from Paul George, and then I think that the Rockets make the finals and they play the Celtics.
Now, that's a very, very interesting statement, but the one thing, the same thing you say about Anthony Davis, can't we apply that to Harden, who's older? We've yet to see Harden put the nail in the coffin.
We have, but that's a good point. I just think that Harden's skill set has developed to a point where...
I agree. I'm not one of those people that says Harden can't play in the playoffs. Not at all. But I do think that if we're looking at Anthony Davis that way, which is fair, he has less playoff experience than Harden. But however, they really, even though Harden has more playoff experience, he doesn't have more impressive signature moments to show for than Anthony Davis.
Yeah, he doesn't have more yet. Well, actually, what are Anthony Davis' signature moments?
What's that?
They're the same, right? As far as Harden just shriveled up in the playoffs, I'll give you that, but Anthony Davis hadn't even been able to get his team to that stage.
He did absolutely dominate that Portland series. He absolutely dominated that.
He did. That was a first round series. Well, this...
Yeah.
I mean, I give it to him. Damian Lillard almost outbattled him, but hey, I just think that if they had those problems with Lillard and McCollum, you're dealing with Westbrook and you're dealing with Harden. LeBron James doesn't have enough left in the tank where he's going to be able to clamp one of those guys down and stop him on the defensive end, and that's what it's going to take. I think that Harden is just going to do whatever he wants to. I think he leads him to victory. Just a lot of faith in a guy like Harden, though.
Yeah.
He hadn't done it yet.
A lot of faith in Harden.
I think the Rockets win the championship. They beat the Celtics in six.
Very strong takes from Spike Lou here. Very strong takes. But thank you, Spike. I appreciate you coming on the podcast. We'll be talking later about hoops, whether it's on air or off air. You know that. In the meantime, man, is our league dead? I assume it is.
Man, it looked like it, right? The new 2K come out this week, right?
Yeah, I'm not getting it. I'm saving for the. I'm getting it when I get the PS5 or the Xbox One or whatever.
You keep forgetting about that. The PS5 coming out. I probably will hold off on the 2K too. I assume that this league is dead. I know J Hove, the commissioner, is 100% getting a new one though. He's probably getting a new one and getting it on PS5. He's a 2K fanatic in that sense. But yeah, I don't know if the league is dead. I'll put a text out there tonight. I think M Extra killed the league. Just being a nuisance overall, so people are like, they didn't.
Yeah, either him or me
you.
With Giannis.
Yeah, him or you doing 100-point games with fucking Giannis. So one of the other two guys killed him.
I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you, and I tell you, it's a lot worse with my friend oh, David. When he gets Giannis, it's unbelievably unfair. I've never in the history of 2K ever seen somebody that's so dominant like Giannis.
Really?
Like, even it's literally a cheat code.
Do you remember when that 2K when Allen Iverson was on the cover?
Oh yeah,
he's better than that.
Yeah, that was the first 2K I played actually.
That 2K was awesome. Allen Iverson was the man on there.
Oh yeah,
big Allen Iverson fan.
Yeah, shout out to Allen Iverson.
Shout out AI, man, dealing with that loss today.
Yeah, great basketball player and an absolute NBA legend.
Absolutely.
Once again, like you said, I want to say rest in peace to coaching legend John Thompson. Prayers and condolences to everyone that is mourning the loss. And Spike, again, thank you for coming on the podcast, my man. I always appreciate your perspective, especially on these on social issues, and I love to talk basketball with you for once on the podcast. That's been fun. So thank you for everything that you do. Glad to hear that you're doing good. Hope that you're doing better next time I talk to you, my friend, and we'll be talking soon.
Let's do it. I'll talk to you later, brother.
All right, take care.
Take care. Thank you.